Hello, Mr. Virk. What's going on?
Steimer, we lost the sponsor. What just happened? I'm baffled right now.
I just don't think they were logged in today. There's been a number of things that are sponsored that have not been logged in properly. So, no, you have not lost us a sponsor. I can guarantee you that.
One of the chain-smoking chimpanzees had some sort of a typo on the typewriter, and the thing's not where it's supposed to be.
You guys are too kind. Adnan, your hits have gone downhill. The sponsor pulled, so apologies.
That's not true.
I always rely on Nalt for the blunt honesty. It's done so bad.
Sponsor real talk
Bill
with Will.
Not have me on the air.
Yeah. we'll get into the Major League Baseball postseason in a second, but Pinder brought up a good point before break. I mean, your Philadelphia Eagles are 2-3. The Philadelphia Flyers just lost 8-2 to the San Jose Sharks. Now, they did rebound with a win over Ottawa. I understand that. But what's going on with your Philadelphia Eagles right now?
I'm glad that Pinder is kicking me when I'm down. I was so furious. You know, you go back to the old days, and you get so excited to have Sunday. Like, forget, you know, pre-Sunday tickets and pre-Red Zone and all the rest of it. You go, oh, my God, hey, the game's on local TV. You get so excited. You're like, all right, Eagles-Vikings, Sunday, 4:25. I know where I'm going to be. It's great. I had that childlike enthusiasm. As I sat down, I said, here we go. Wentz is back. You know, the first four games, 2-2, who really cares? Fine. He was gone the first couple of games. Nick Foles is whatever. That game was so deplorable. I mean, literally, Philadelphia had zero business winning that game. And yet, they almost pulled it out late when Wentz and the Eagles start to rally. But the receivers are terrible. Obviously, Ajayi now is done for the season. And their defense did a good job, but it's not like they were forcing turnovers. I mean, it was a mess of a game, and I was so frustrated watching it. Having said that, that entire division is awful. So it's odd to say it's a must-win game against the Giants, who are worse than Philadelphia. But they win tonight, boys, 3-2, and all of a sudden, the NFC East, which is generally a good division, all of a sudden they're going to have like a 9-7, 10-6 division winner. I really feel that way.
Yeah, it's not been a great division this year.
So are you banging the let's go get Le'Veon Bell drum, or have you got a longer play at hand here?
No, I am, Pinder, because somebody said LeSean McCoy. I said, are you kidding? Like, let's be honest here. Like, all the off the course stuff. I go, Philadelphia might get him, and he could get suspended. Like, I don't know how this course is pending. Listen, I loved him when he was with the Eagles, but, of course, some things have happened to Shady. So, yes, I am big on go get Le'Veon Bell. Part of Philadelphia's success last season was Joe Bader being smart and savvy enough to get a guy like a Jay Ajayi, and they didn't give up much for him. So, hey, let's go ahead and do that right now. The window is only so small. We know the Rams are great. They look like a juggernaut. But after that, the NFC feels a little more wide open. So, especially with the division for the taking, yes, go get Bell. Go make a move.
Okay, let's get into the Major League Baseball postseason. We know that the American League Championship Series is set, but just a couple nights ago, we saw the Yankees eliminated by the Boston Red Sox. We got four games in that rivalry. What did you make of 2018's edition of the Red Sox and Yankees?
Well, the good news is it took my attention away from the Flyers getting drilled by the Sharks 8-2, which was on NBCSN at the time. So I was flipping back and forth and realized I had no reason to keep watching. That's farce. As for the baseball, I was equally furious. I wanted five games. As it's been well documented, as I've bragged to you both that I'm friends with both of the managers, and it's been really awkward for me watching it. As a baseball fan, I love Yankees, Red Sox, and a passion, but as a guy who's cheering for both, I said, God, no matter what, I don't want any managerial decisions to come back to hurt these guys. And everybody's raving about Alex Cora, and for good reason, managed a near-flawless series. My poor buddy Booney is just getting beat up by these ingrate Yankee fans who seem to point out the fact that apparently the manager is to blame for the fact that they couldn't hit. And here's the other part of it. That 16-1 game, you know, the headline of the New York Post is lowering the Boone and just blaming him, saying that he should have taken out Severino sooner. And I know Pinder's going to play devil's advocate on this one, but listen, it's 3-0, and Severino started the next inning. He gave up six pitches. It was bases loaded. Then he brought in Lance Lynn, and the heavens caved in. So the devil's advocate says, well, listen, if you take Severino then, it's only a 3-0 game. Bottom line is this, you got to score more than one run. Okay, they got drilled 16-1. It didn't matter what was happening. They needed to score runs. And as for the final game, again, these people who don't understand anything are like, hey, listen, Sabathia, stay in there too long. Again, it's not unreasonable to expect your offense to score more than three runs in a game. They led the universe in home runs, the most ever in a single season. The reason that they could not step up was because those guys didn't hit well enough. So, listen, I don't want to hear any criticism of Aaron Boone. The sluggers didn't step up. That Giancarlo Stanton, that bat, you could have set a timer to it. You knew he was not going to hit any of those Craig Kimbrell sliders, especially when Kimbrell was imploding there.
The only real, critique I would have is when Sale looked so bloody good out of in the eighth inning, why didn't they bring him out for the ninth? Or is that just hindsight 2020? That's what his job was, to get to Kimbrell.
Yeah, I mean, part of that with Kimbrell is that And here's another part of it. Some of the second guessers of Alex Cora are saying, man, once you saw Kimbrel struggling like that, you're going to pull it. Listen, you're not pulling the closer, okay? Craig Kimbrel could have given up, like, we didn't give up seven runs because obviously the game would have been over. But the point is, these guys are so set in their roles and the psyche is so straightforward that no matter what, you're not going to pull Kimbrel at that point in time. So the good news for the Yankees is they had a chance. And part of what Alex did that was so smart was bringing in a Chris Sale in the eighth and bringing in Porcello, you know, to pitch an inning of relief, which, and listen, I love AC. I texted with him after the game. I was so proud of him. He did an amazing job. But we saw the Giants do that with Bumgarner, pitching him in relief as well. So bottom line is this. The Yankees had their opportunities, and you guys both know this. Anybody who tries to blame managers is like people who in hockey just always blame the officials. Once in a while, it's accurate. Absolutely. There are times that the official is poor. And by the way, Angel Hernandez had a terrible series. At one point, Mark Teixeira texted me, who's having a worse game, Luis Severino or Angel Hernandez? That's true. There's bad umpires. There's bad officials. Whatever you blame officials for all the time, that's a problem. Boston was the better team. They were favored on paper, and they played better, period.
Fair.
Where are we? Like, is David Price ever going to shed this monkey on his back of great in the regular season but cannot pitch in the postseason? Like, we have seen it his entire career. Tampa Bay, Toronto, now Boston. Now he's being transitioned to the Bulls. Like, it's crazy, but it's gotten to the point where maybe we never see him shed this monkey on his back.
You're right that it's crazy, Pat, because if I said to you, this guy's, look at that contract, 7 years, $200 million, $30 million, whatever it is, I mean, that's an insane amount of money for a guy that you don't trust to win a playoff start. And in the case versus the Yankees, Alex knew it was critical. You could not pitch him at Yankee Stadium. I mean, there's just no way. It's his personal house of horrors. His ERA is highly inflated there, so you had to pitch him in game two. Even though in retrospect, some people say, well, listen, why didn't you pitch Porcello in game two? Well, here's why. You couldn't pitch Price on the road, at Yankee Stadium. So even though he's not the better pitcher, you try to give him the benefit of the doubt. And now, again, this is why Alex is so good. This is no time for hurt feelings. This is no point for pride and reputation. You're not good enough. See ya. Go to the bullpen. If you can pitch effectively there, awesome. Because guess what? Boston's bullpen is a concern, which is why Porcello was coming on in relief, which is why Chris Sale was on in relief for an inning or two. So David Price can be a valuable weapon out of the bullpen. But you're absolutely right that it's an enormous disappointment that this guy cannot play well in the playoffs. I mean, listen, of the qualified starts and innings, he has the third – he's 0-9 in the playoffs. He's got the third highest ERA of any postseason pitcher. That's absurd that a guy of his talent could be that bad. And in answer to your question, does he shed the label? I don't know if Alex gives him another chance. If he's putting him in – think about this. If he's putting him in relief for the ALCS, where they are the underdog against Houston, Houston's the better team. Let's suppose they knock off the Astros. Do you really think the manager's going to go, you know what, David Price has now earned himself a start in that game through the World Series? I don't think it's going to happen.
It's funny. Price was a guy when he pitched for Toronto against Kansas City in that ALCS that after the series ended, it had leaked out of Kansas City that they'd figured him out and that he was taking an extra breath after setting on the mound before throwing a breaking pitch, so he was tipping his pitches. We now hear that about Luis Severino. How do you feel about this when you hear it come out? Because I don't think it's it doesn't mean the hitters know every pitch that's coming. It doesn't mean that every batter's tuned into this, but it probably just means they got a little bit of intel, right?
Yeah, and I find it fascinating, Pinder. I used to always think that tipping pitches was something that only happened like in the prehistoric era, like long before the three of us started watching baseball. Like, it just, you know, these guys are too smart now, and think of how I said I was so ignorant at the time. Like, how dumb do you got to be to do something like that? Take a big breath for a certain pitch, or, like, wipe your arm with a certain way. Like, come on, man. These guys don't do that. And yet, it happens. Severino's the latest example. Eddie Perez was telling me last year during the playoffs, he goes, Yu Darvish is tipping his pitches. I said, get out of here. He goes, watch this. If he does this, it's a fastball, it's a curveball. And, of course, as soon as they were knocked out, it came out, yep, Yu Darvish was tipping his pitches. And the crazy thing is that in baseball, these guys – I mean, listen, once they're onto something, they're onto something. And it's amazing how the story doesn't get leaked. Meaning, if I'm Brock Holt, let's say, and the media is asking me, man, you guys really hit Severino well. It's amazing that they don't actually let it slip. Like, we just felt like we knew what was coming. What do you mean by that? Was he tipping his pitches? And then all of a sudden the story comes out. They wait till the game's over, or the series is over in this case, before the truth comes out. But you're absolutely right in that. Does it play an impact? Sure. But if a guy has a filthy breaking ball, like if it's an incredible off-speed pitch, it doesn't matter if it's coming. You're not going to hit it. Same thing with a great heater. Like Nathan Eovaldi, that guy throws 97, 98. So even if you know a fastball is coming, good luck hitting 98. Did it play a part in Boston's success? Sure. But was it ultimately everything? No. The real concern for the Yankees is they're starting pitching. Only one guy stepped up and that's Tanaka. Jay Happ was a big acquisition, didn't pitch well. And then obviously we saw what happened with Sabathia, didn't have much length, and Severino couldn't deliver.
He's Adnan Virk from ESPN, joins us every Thursday on Pinder and Steinberg here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. So break it down. How do you see Boston and Houston in the ALCS?
Absolute blast, boys. Listen, the bad news is this. A week ago when we talked, I'm telling you, there's nothing better than October baseball. And instead, this might have been one of the worst first rounds in recent history. Seriously. I mean, when you had three sweeps and Yankee Sox only went four, that was without question an absolute disappointment. Here's the good news. Now we got the real big boys. And to anybody's eye who followed this season, the Red Sox and the Astros were the two best teams in the American League. And just like when we were watching the NFL in the 90s, you'd get Niners, Cowboys in the NFC. The winner wins the Super Bowl. That's what this is going to be like. I have, and this is no disrespect to the Brewers and Dodgers, which I think will also be compelling. I like Milwaukee. Will was early on Milwaukee. The Brewers are his team. But I do think the winner of this wins it all. And here's the big question for Boston. There's a concern there, of course, with the bullpen. But their offense can mash, and their starting pitching, with the exception of David Price, who will now be in the bullpen, is strong. But where exactly is the weakness for Houston? I mean, the problem is you look at that starting rotation, and you go, all right, well, Verlander the last couple of years is back to being the guy he was in 2011. You got McCullers, you got McHugh, you got Keuchel. All right, offense, ridiculous. Bregman now is a real superstar. Springer went deep again. Correa is finally healthy. Altuve's a monster. Okay, bullpen, well, wait, they got Osuna, the former Blue Jays. Actually been an upgrade over Ken Giles. So I don't understand where Houston's going to lose the game. Like, it has to be an example of strength versus strength. If Boston's offense just somehow overwhelms the power arms of Houston, and it's like a J.D. Martinez versus Verlander, and just, you know, the advantage goes to the batter. But honestly, when I look at it, it's tough for me to pick Boston as much as I'm cheering for them for AC, Alex Cora. I like Houston in six. I just don't know where the weakness is for that team.
What about on the other side? Clearly, as you noted, like the Brewers came on strong late, and then they were a team that everyone was waiting to just, you know, not be a playoff club, and yet here they are, one of the last two left. Can they get past a talented Dodgers group that was the exact opposite, that everyone thought was going to run away with the entire league, and instead it took them, what, till the final quarter of the season to really get their act together?
Here's the reason to not think it's the Brewers. Remember Rocktober, Pinder, and everyone said, oh, man, this Colorado Rockies team can't lose. And all of a sudden, there's a bit of a delay, a little bit of rest versus rust, that immortal argument. And then the World Series, they got taken care of. So for the Brewers, you go, man, they, this team can't lose. But they've had a couple of days off. And all of a sudden, all of a sudden, if the Dodgers steal game one, it's a different story. But honestly, Milwaukee, if they make the World Series, it's so incredibly unlikely because of their starting pitching. It's just so unimpressive. I'll be completely blunt about it. There's no guy that you go, oh my God, how about this starter? All those guys, you go, I can handle all these guys. It's not that bad. But the bullpen is bananas. Like, it's the Royals from 2015, 2014, when they had the Herrera-Holland mix going, because Josh Hader is just unhittable. Like, he strikes at half the guys he faces. And they've got Jeffress as well. And, I mean, their bullpen's a joke. And then their offense can mash. Obviously, Jesus Aguilar is a guy I love. He's got all those hits. But Yelich should be the MVP. Lorenzo Cain is great. So for Milwaukee right now, they're the favorite, Ryan, going in, because they've just been streaking and done so well lately. But the Dodgers, like, to a man, you'd say they might have more talent. I mean, they were in the World Series a year ago. They haven't been weaker, with the exception of Corey Seager, who's not there. But, oh, they upgraded with Manny Machado, so that's going to be fine. He had that decisive home run in Game 4 against the Braves. Kershaw, here's the best reason I like the Dodgers. Kershaw had the best start of his postseason career. Like, that Game 2, Dave Roberts said, that's the best I've ever seen him. That's the best I've ever seen a playoff start. Eight innings, he was economical, he was efficient, he was awesome. And he didn't have to be the ace, because Rue pitched so well in Game 1. Let me be a little concerned that Walker Buehler didn't get the win in Game 3. But honestly, if Kershaw pitches like that, and you've got the Machados and the Justin Turners and Max Muncy's, and everyone's going to be hearing about, Dodgers have a good chance. But I do think Milwaukee is the better team, top to bottom.
With Adnan Virk from ESPN every Thursday on Pinder and Steinberg, before we let you go, good stuff on the Major League Baseball postseason. Might be one of the better weeks of the season in college football. We've got a ton of important, outstanding games this weekend. Washington, Oregon, Georgia, LSU, Wisconsin, Michigan. This is a big week in the national title picture.
Yeah, I think that Wisconsin-Michigan game is really interesting, Pat. You know, Big Ten is kind of tricky because you feel like it's Ohio State and who else. But if we get anything like the last time the Big Ten showed in with Ohio State and Penn State, and that game which went down to the wire, and the Buckeyes win by one, hopefully we get another classic here. And Michigan is a team that I find really interesting, because now I say, hang on a second. After the week one loss against Notre Dame, everybody wrote them off. But maybe they get a little currency, and if they can beat Wisconsin at home, maybe they can pose a big challenge to Ohio State, and Harbaugh can finally get over that hump. being able to beat one of his major rivals. That, to me, is a huge Big Ten game. And you mentioned eventually we're going to have a loss here, okay? Like, we can't just keep having chalk. So it's not going to be Alabama, but maybe eventually one of these teams get tripped up, a Clemson, a Georgia, a Notre Dame, something like that. So I'm with you that it's going to be exciting this weekend. But particularly, I'm focused on what's happening in Ann Arbor.
Last one for me. Last week you told us you were just going to go dark on Sunday night, avoid sports, and watch A Star Is Born. What's the review?
So I liked it better when it was called Walk the Line or Crazy Heart or
no.
Tender Mercy. Listen, it's a good movie, guy, and it's a great date movie. Listen, absolutely, Pinder, take your wife, get a dinner for the kids. Pat, if you have a special someone, go ahead and check it out in the theater, because it's, listen, every, I don't mean to be blunt here, but every white woman that I know is loving this movie. I mean, 30s, 40s, 50s, they love it. They're going, oh, my God. They're either just in love with Bradley Cooper, or they've always just found a self-destructive country singer just to be absolutely the man of their dreams. Because I don't know any woman who's not telling me they love this movie. But for me and my wife, I said, listen, it's a good film, and the real shock here is how good Bradley Cooper sings. I mean, the guy obviously took singing lessons, and he nails it. The big song is Shallow, which is number one on iTunes right now, probably going to win the Oscar for best song. But I love a song called Maybe It's Time. I mean, he croons with the best of them, so he delivers. He's obviously a great actress. You know he's going to nail that role out of the park. And Lady Gaga, I thought, acquitted herself nicely. I mean, certainly she's going to sing, but to be able to remove all the glamour and kind of play down and say you're playing somebody who is pre-superstar, who's an absolute unknown, I think that's harder than people realize. And she did a really nice job with it. Cooper, as a director, did a solid job. Sam Elliott plays his brother. I love him. Hopefully he gets nominated. But you can see the story coming from a mile away, Ryan. It's not an original story, but it's a well-told story, and I liked it. I gave it 3 Maple Leafs.
Last movie I saw in theater with my wife was Straight Outta Compton when she was pregnant. The boys turned 3 a couple weeks ago, so we're overdue.
By the way, Paul Giamatti, great in Straight Outta Compton. I loved him. What a good movie.
Bye, Felicia. What do you have in on the latest Cinephile?
We've got Ike Barinholtz. I don't know if you guys saw Blockers. You know, that comedy came out in April.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's great.
Mad TV.
He's one of the dads. Exactly. Mad TV, exactly. Yeah. So Ike Barinholtz is one of the dads. He's got a new movie out called The Oath. So we just had him on Cinephile. He's promoting it. Really funny political comedy. He plays like this crazy left wing who doesn't like what's happening in the Oval Office. And it's obviously ripped from the headlines of what's happening right now in the States. But he told me his favorite Mad TV sketch is one he did with Jordan Peele. In which they play like superheroes who end up being like, you know, I think they were Lex Luthor and Superman, but they end up showing at places where there's nothing happening. So he had some good Mad TV stories. He told me about Blockers, his favorite moment there with John Cena, and just this movie in general. So it's pretty funny. Ike Barinholtz is in the latest in the file. And Ty Burr, who's a really good film critic, he was just telling me the stories about being a film critic. He said, by the way, guys, he's 61 years old. Because he probably remembered his first movie when he was 6 or 7. He's averaged, if anybody's wondering if they want to be a film critic, he's averaged a movie a day. And he goes, it's not exactly like, hey, at noon every day I got to, you know, throw in a movie. But if you took up the average, I go, that's pretty amazing. Like, think about us as sportscasters. I don't know if we've averaged a sporting event today. Maybe. But a film critic, this guy averages a movie every day. How awesome is that?
That's intense. Wow.
So on the latest Cinephile, good stuff, Mr. Virk. We will talk to you again next Thursday. Enjoy some football over the weekend and enjoy the start of the championship series.
Eagles.
Yeah. Enjoy it all, my friend.
Yeah. Big win tonight, boys, for the Eagles, and I appreciate you. And let me know the name of the sponsor to call. Get the affiliates back on board. Let's get this taken care of. We'll do whatever you need.
Banger monkey. See you, Adnan. Adnan Virk from ESPN joins us every Thursday at 3 o'clock here on Pinder and Steinberg.